What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Shooting the Breeze. And today we have a special guest with us, our father-in-law, Keith Ford. What's going on, Keith?
Hey, guys.
We've always been talking about bringing Keith on just because, like, Sawyer and I are not educated whatsoever, or not to his extent when we talk about the scripture, or talk about generally the things we talk about. But we got Keith here today. He's going to talk to us a little about theology. We're going to talk about his testimony. And yeah, we're going to basically interrogate him. So
go.
You ready?
And I don't know how much you think I know, but we'll let them be the judge of that.
We just brought you on here to make you look
it
like,
can't be
like
any
an
worse
idiot
than some of the stuff we've said.
Exactly. Exactly. But y'all ready?
Yes, sir. Ready.
All right. Well, let's dive on in. So Keith, we want to first kind of talk about your testimony, kind of, you know, give you your background, I guess, like what you do now, and basically the testimony that led to this, you know, what was.
All right. Yeah. So now I'm on staff at Christ Chapel. I do a variety of things. My main role now is projects and just kind of help them get these campuses ready. And I do men's ministry and also mission ministry, but Bridget and me, we've been in ministry actually this December will be 31 years. We really we started it. We got married in 92 on my birthday, same as your anniversary, Cody.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then we got married October 16, 1992, and then in December we started a church with a guy, and it was nine of us, and we were kind of his right-hand man. And for a few years, and then he took some time off. And next thing we know, he turned it over, and we pastored it and all. But it's literally we've been in ministry the whole time we've been married. But backstory going back. So I was raised. I came from a long group of preachers in the Ford clan. I think there's 14 or 15 pastors and all. And really, they told me that's the last thing I wanted to do. Actually said I would not do that. My dad's gone on to be with the Lord, and my mom. But earlier on, my dad and their mom, they split up, and they both remarried. Great people, and I live with my dad, and so I moved in when he was about 13 years old, and church was not a possibility. I mean, it was every time the doors open. And there wasn't no sleeping in. There wasn't no, and my daddy was one of those kind of guys. He just, you know, you're going to live right, or he was going to make you live right. And so I went through a spell that I determined that when the church that I went to wasn't like what we're part of now today, but it was more of a, maybe old school is not the term, but the music did not reach me. The preaching, it was we actually had a youth class, and we had this idea. They said, well, we could name it, and so we come up with this idea. We like to roller skate in them days, so we said we call ourselves Holy Rollers, and the church about had a fit because they said that they used to call them Holy Rollers. You know, when they were when back in the day, and that was a bad word for kind of like making fun of the church. So they didn't take our name, and I had made my mind up. I said, as soon as I can, I'm not going to church anymore. And so I turned 16 years old. When I turned 16, got a car. I told my dad, it was really a lie, but I told my dad, I said, look, you know, I said, this church don't reach me. I'll go to church. I promised him I'd serve the Lord. I said, if you'll let me go to a church of my choosing. So he said, I don't care where you go as long as you go to church. So every Sunday morning, I'd leave out church like I was supposed to. And I would drive because I knew my dad somehow knew when I lied. So I didn't actually go into the church services, but I would pull into a parking lot of a church. And I would sit there just long enough to be able to honestly look him in the face and say, look, no, I went to, you know, First Baptist, or I went to First Assembly, or I went to, you know, whatever, Christ Chapel. And I wasn't lying, but I didn't go to church. And I actually, I guess now I realize it was conviction. But I had gone to a church, on a Sunday night. My dad and them went there, and it was, called Peachtree City Church of God. Now it's called Go Church.
Oh yeah.
Over there, a guy, pastor name was Alan Mature, Trey Powell. Actually, that's where he started ministry over there as I think youth pastor and all, but very small church at the time. I think it was 50, 60, 70 people there, but I went on a Sunday night and I felt conviction. I felt something. And I had gone down to the altar and I made this statement to the Lord. I said, you know, if you're real, and this one of these kind of churches, you know, they shouted and spoke in tongues and, you know, just run the pews and stuff like that. But I made this statement to God. I said, if you are real, then I want you to just knock me out on the ground. And I think I said back 10 feet or something like that. I wanted it to be. I seen people falling out, people catch them. And I basically said, if this is real, you know, I wanted God to knock me down.
Right.
And so I'm down at the altar, and well-meaning people come down, and they're praying with me. Half the people praying with me, they telling me to hold on, and the other half tell me to let go.
Yeah.
You know, so let go. Come on, you need to let go. You need to let go. Hold on. I was like, you need to hold on. Hold on. And to be honest with you, it just, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, these folks are crazy. I finally had all I could take, and I just got up from the altar, and I said, you guys are nuts. And I walked out of the church. And when I walked out of the church, I walked out in the parking lot, and they were actually down from the location they are on Peachtree City now. And I remember kind of throwing my fist up in the air, and I made this statement because in my mind, to be honest with you, I always felt like I would come back to serving the Lord. I just didn't want to do it in my younger years because, again, I felt like nothing the church had related to my generation. This was in the 80s, 86 to be exact. And so I shook my hand at God and I said, look, I won't serve you till I'm good and ready. And I left and got in my car and I went home. I didn't speak about it to my dad, my stepmom Bunny at the time, but my dad worked second shift at a company over there, Kmart Warehouse at the time, over in Noonan. And dad, came in my room because he wouldn't get home to midnight and school nights, you know, I'd be in the bed and all, and usually in the mornings he'd be asleep. But he came in my room and he told me that he had had this dream about me, that I had been in this awful accident. And, you know, he would ask me, are you living right? And I'd always say, yeah, Dad, you know, I'm living right. You know, I may not be like you, but I'm living right. And you had to know, again, my dad, when I come in on Friday night, and I'd have a friend and we might have slipped off and, you know, drank some beers or did whatever, we would come in and I'd have to walk past my dad in the living room. He'd be on his knees praying at the sofa, crying, asking God to save me and my friends. And we'd have to, and he never would get up. I don't know if he sat there and looked out the window till I was pulling up. He just, if he was sincere, I believe he was. Mm-hmm. But I'd have to walk past that and I'd get in the room. My friend would always say, whoever it was, well, what was all that about? And I'd say, hey, don't worry about it. My folks are super religious.
Yeah.
Right.
And all. But so I thought in my mind, my dad telling me I had this dream. I'm thinking, you know, the preachers done called my dad. He wasn't there that night. And they done told me I done got up and walked out of church, and they trying to scare me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in those days, we don't talk about it these days, but in those days, they talked about the reality of dying and going to hell.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And being ready for heaven. We don't hear about it a lot, but in those days, and that was a fear. I mean, I wasn't stupid. I didn't want to die and go to hell, but I didn't want to live for God. And then a couple of days went by with that, and literally he came in another day and he said, hey, my mama, which we called her Meemaw, which was my granny on my daddy's side. He said, she called me and she said, I had a dream of this, that you were in this accident, and she described my car. Mm-hmm. And my mamaw, she used to paint pictures, and she had this painting where she painted, it was a Jesus, and it had like a Bible in one arm, and he was holding like a lamb in the other, you know, real spiritual right. picture. But she was describing, she said, I see that same picture, except the Lord has you in his hand. And he said he has this crumbled up car. And she described the color of the car. Again, now I know that all to be true now, but again, I'm just convinced. Okay, these guys have all got together
to get you to.
Yeah,
basically, all a big
they're trying to scare me into getting this save. You know, trying to scare me out of hell, so to speak, or scare the hell out of me. I don't know whichever one. that kind of rocked on. It really kind of it aggravated, but yeah. This went on for a couple of days. And I left out for school on a Thursday morning. That was a Sunday. I left out on the school on a Thursday morning. It happened to be it was March 14th of 1986. And fast forward a lot of years, Cassidy, my firstborn, was born on March 14th,
mm-hmm.
2000. Same day. Years later, so that whole what the devil meant for bad, mm-hmm. and I don't think I was ever that important. I think Cassie was special, or Cody special, or something that the Lord was just trying to save me for something he's gonna do. But I left out that day, got in my car, and I started up the road. We lived on a dead end street. I had a guy that rode to school with me every day, never missed a day. And I drove down to his house. He lived down towards the end of the road, pulled up in his driveway. His mom came to the door, and she kind of waved at me, and she said, hey, he's running late. He's not going to ride with you. And that had never happened, you know, which he'd mm-hmm. been riding with me all year.
Right.
Never had happened. I said, whatever. I turn around. I start driving towards school, and I never wore a seatbelt. It wasn't a law in those days. Mm-hmm. And I in those days, if you had a cool car, and I had a brand new Z28 Camaro, brand mm-hmm. spanking new, it was an 86. This was in 86. I bought it. My dad co-signed with me. When I bought it, they put it on the front page of the Noonan Times. You know, I got this fancy car, chick magnet. You know, I'm cool. Never to own that. You know, we didn't tint the windows back then, but we would let our seat, we pull our seat forward as far as we could pull it, and then we would let the seat back, and we would kind of lay back with our, like, drive it, where if you was behind you, you thought nobody was in the car.
Right.
And that's the way that you, if you were cool in those days, you drove, and I was trying to be cool. So literally, I'm on the way to school, and in Noonan, Georgia, in front of the country club, there's a road that comes onto the road I was on, and it maybe a couple of hundred yards before I got to that road, I didn't even think about it. I didn't hear a voice. I didn't do it. I just reached down and I let my seat back, let my backwards, and I let the back of my seat up, and I reached over and clicked my seatbelt. No, nothing. This happened. It wasn't like you. It was just like I just did it.
Yeah.
And when I topped that hill, I hit water, and I lost control of the car. And when I looked up, I seen a school bus, and I seen the lady. It was, I never forget it. She throwed her hands up like. And so I throwed my hands up, mm-hmm. no airbags, no nothing. And when the dust settled, so to speak, I'm sitting there, and I remember thinking, am I alive? I did at the moment of hitting that bus. It was a school bus, and it was loaded with kids. I did say, God help me. Mm-hmm. I remember saying that. I said, God help me. When it stopped, I'm sitting there, and I'm kind of, I don't know how guys do, but I was kind of feeling myself. Mm-hmm. My neck was real sore. I didn't know if my neck was, I didn't know what was going. It turned out my seatbelt broke my collarbone
mm-hmm.
In the impact. I'm looking to my right, and the engine of the car that I'm in is beside, my engine is shoved in the middle of the seat. My seat on this side's on my driver passenger side. The engine was all the way in that seat. If the guy had been in the seat, he'd been killed. I thought I'm alive. And then all of a sudden I heard a lady come up to my window and she said, you know, going to help me. I remember, and this is a lot of years ago, but I remember she said, "Oh my God, look at his legs." And I looked down. I thought my legs was just bent at my knees, and my right leg was bent. My femur was broken, and my back leg was bent backwards, and my foot was behind me.
Good night.
With the seat, my seat broke and come forward. My steering wheel was pushed up against my chest. And at that time, you know, we used to watch Dukes of Hazzard, and you know what happens every time a car crashed in those days? It blew up. You know, I realize I'm stuck. I can't get out of here. And so then I panic, you know, get me out of here. Help me, help me. And they telling me to calm down. Kind of hard to calm down when you your foot's behind you. I'm thinking my neck's broke. But they literally, it took about almost an hour. They took the jaws of life and they cut me out of that car. Flew me, ended up flying me to Atlanta. The long story short of kind of the testimony, instead of getting better, I got worse. I developed a condition where the fluid around my bone went to my lungs. My lungs filled up. I couldn't breathe. I was on a rest. They put me on a respirator for 21 days. It was a Sunday night. The doctor came in the room. I was not compliant as a good, patient, just anxiety. I believe it now. I was afraid of dying. But I guess still stubborn. And literally on a Sunday night, they had lowered my sedation enough that they could talk to me while I was still had the tube bent down my throat. And the doctor came out, I'll never forget it. He pulled his mask off, you know, now we COVID, they don't do that, but he pulled his mask off. He let me be able to see him. And he told me, he said, "Son," he said, I'm a doctor is what my profession is. He said, but my calling is a Christian. And he said, your dad especially is concerned where you're going to spend eternity. And he said, as a doctor, I want to tell you, he said, your vitals and your condition, he said, you're declining. He said, and unless God performs a miracle, he said, you will not survive the night. He said, your lungs are, he said, literally, and I could tell it. It was everything. You'd have to know it, but it's like oxygen is in the room, but I couldn't take it in. He asked me, he said, would you like to have a minister come and pray with you? Well, you know, I'm a lot of stuff. I wasn't stupid. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to die. I at least need to make sure I don't go to hell. And that was my thinking. And they called Alan Matura, which was the pastor at that church. He actually came down and in the night, and he came in there and he said, "Keith, you know," he said, "I understand the doctor says you're in bad shape." And he said, "Would you like to get things right? Would the Lord blink your eyes?" And I think I just started just blinking nonstop, you know, and couldn't pray the prayer out loud. You know, sometimes we'll say, "Hey, pray this prayer." But in that moment in my mind, I said, "Lord, my prayer was, I don't want to die and go to hell." And Alan prayed for me. And when he got done praying, he said this, he said, "Son," he said, "you are not going to die." He said, "You're going to survive this thing." And he said, "And you are going to preach the gospel." And then he left. And the doctor came in my room the next day, next morning. And his first words was, he said, "Well, you're still with us. That's a good sign." And he said, "But you're not out of the woods." My lungs were very, very, very weak. Still got a lot of trauma. He said, "It's going to be, the plan is," he said, "we're going to leave you on this respirator." He said, "Probably for another couple of weeks. Try to bring it down, let you breathe a little bit on your own." And he said, "But we hopefully we're going to get you through this." By about 4 or 5 that same day, they pulled the respirator out of my my lungs just strengthened. I had to go through a major. I went from 215, 220 pounds up to 155 pounds in the hospital. You know, you think you wouldn't forget walking and all, but I had to go back through rehabilitation. I missed my senior year.
How old were you?
16.
And you were 215 pounds?
Now, one of the things I did, I was about 212, 213. But now I did steroids in those days too. So, you know, this is old school testimony. We got steroids.
Yeah.
And so I was very, very built and lost it down to, you know, and I may have climbed, you know, now when I weigh, you weigh naked because we try to weigh lower. But in those days I tried to, you know, weigh as much as I could. So I may have had my jacket on, but I was solid 200 plus pounds.
In hindsight though, like, I mean, I'm sure I'm 100% certain it was the Lord, but in a way you could be glad that you were on those steroids because that might have sped up your healing process even more.
Maybe so.
Who knows?
But I did. I had to go through some surgeries. You know, I had to learn really to walk again. I learned something way back then about people that has always stuck with me. I was popular in school. You know, I was liked. I was big. I mean, I had the look. I had a new car. But I laid up in the hospital for over a month, and I came home. I was on, they called it homebound. I had a teacher that came to my home that did my grades to try to, I did graduate with my class. I walked out and got my diploma. I had a cane. But but during that time, you know, I dated a girl, and Ann, and she was there with me, but I didn't have a single, all those people that, you know, I thought that was just there, my friends, you know, that they, we partied together, you know, got each other's back. Even when I got home, I got home the day that I was released from the hospital, the day of my senior prom. I had a tuxedo running off. My neighbor who didn't ride with me actually went to the prom, and we rented a limousine, but I didn't get to ride in the limousine, so he stopped by my house to let me stick my head out the door to see him in the limousine. I never forget it. He got stuck because we had our little dip in our driveway, and it was a stretch limousine that got stuck. And I was so glad, you know, because you know, I'm like, serves you right, man.
Yeah.
But I'd like to say that was a defining moment in my life. I'd like to say, you know, from that point, you know, I'm 16. I serve God. I did for a while because I really felt like I was headed for hell. I believe I was. By the way, nobody on the bus was injured. I think there was a few bloody noses and a busted lip, but I was the only one. The way the impact hit, I went underneath the front of the bus. I took the axles out, so I took the brunt of it. So it was a wake-up call in my life. My grandmother later, a mamaw, told me that when she saw that she prayed God build a hedge around me. And the car, the pictures, if you look at the way the hood and everything, it was crampled up all around my face, the engine. But you know, I didn't have any injuries to my to this, and I believe God spared me. But it took years of steel coming back to, I didn't want to go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really want the church thing. Still, I thought when I get older, because I thought when you get older, you didn't care what the music sounded like. You didn't care if it was relevant. So church just didn't seem to be relevant. But it wasn't long I was done with the being frayed. And so I that started getting back into a few things. And you want me to tell the whole story on it?
Send it.
I started dabbling some things. I started finding out that you could, you know, make money on stolen goods. I started, it was radar detectors in those days. And we ended up starting to break in cars and steal radar detectors. And then I actually took orders from people around town, and I would go being an electrician. Oh, okay. I'd skip some school. I got into stealing. Stealing got into stealing all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And just kind of, I got my brother into it. I started getting people. I've always been a leader, but I got a group of people into, you know, casing out, stealing stuff. And we got pretty into it.
That's good.
and then one night, I happened to go to a church, and this was in 91 or 92 down in Thomaston. And I was there, and they gave an altar call. And again, I felt that conviction of what it is. But at that time, I felt almost like I was going to get sick. You know, I just felt this heaviness. And I closed my eyes. And when I closed my eyes, it's like a movie came on. It kind of scared me. I opened my eyes up like, man, that was freaky. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe I was daydreaming. I closed my eyes and I was right back in this dream vision, whatever you want to call it. And, we were at a hospital, my whole family, and we were in a parking lot, and I opened my eyes up a couple of times, and I realized the Lord's speaking to me. And I just let it play out. And literally, I'm asking my family. I remember my mom. I'm saying, Mom, who are we here to see? You know, Dad, who are we here to see? I'm asking Bunny, my sisters, my brother. Nobody's talking to me. You know, everybody's upset. We go in and we get in the elevator. We go up to this room. We go around, and I'm saying, who are we here? Who are we here to see?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's saying nothing, and the doctor's in the room, and I realize that the doctor just had said this person had passed. And I remember just kind of easing up past everybody, looking over somebody's shoulder to see who was in the bed, and it was me in the bed. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the Lord said, you need to make a decision. You know, I felt like the Lord said, you were dead, and I spared your life.
Yeah.
And you need to make a decision. And I literally, I remember it was in Thomaston. I got up, I ran to the altar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I dove in there. I don't even think I nailed down. But I remember I made fun of this guy. There was a guy there that was he lived down in Thomaston, and he wrestled. He was part of this amateur wrestling, and he wore a mask, and he was the guy they beat the tar out of and throw out the ring. He never won a match, but he was just proud that he got to be a wrestler, and he always got beat up. But he would go to the altar every week, and he would boo-hoo and cry, and where he'd get up, I mean, the floor would be wet. And I mean, that guy's a geek, man. I mean, that joker's sick.
Yeah.
And I remember when I got up from that altar, my back was wet. That guy was praying over me, and I almost felt like, because I never really, my dad was tenderhearted, I wasn't real tenderhearted, I thought crying was for girls, but I felt like I got up and the Lord gave me the guy's heart that was praying for me. It's like, mm-hmm. And then every time I get in the presence of the Lord, I would cry.
Mm, yeah.
And you know, fast forward, not made all perfect decisions, but from that time on, I did set my mind to serve the Lord, and I made some mistakes in relationships and got in ministry really for the wrong motive. I thought, you know, God taught me a lot of stuff. I've been prideful, but I met Bridget, and
Bridget,
yeah, she was sold out. Always been, you know, greatest thing ever happened to me besides the Lord and my girls and my son-in-laws. But
besides all those things.
In the day, we determined that, you know, we were going to serve God. And so felt called to the ministry. And early on, you know, Bridget worked, she was a 411 operator. So, mm-hmm. You know, what that used to be was, if you had the landline, And if you didn't know a number, you dialed 411, and they'd say, 411 operator, what number, what city, or you'd ask for a number, they'd give you the city and the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she did. She worked these crazy hours. So I'm all involved in church. She could never be with me. And ultimately, she quit that job, and so she could be with me. And really, we've done ministry ever since, you know. Wow. And we've not we made the decision. We told you guys, you know, about we felt like if we would honor God first and not make our life's goal just money. Not that we have a problem with it. We love it.
Yeah.
But that God would take care of us, and you know. 30-something years into it now, and about 35 years serving the Lord. I mean, it's been the greatest thing we've ever done.
Wow, man.
So just timeline-wise, so you went from, so six, when you were 16, that would have been 86, is that what you said?
86.
And then you served the Lord and then kind of got back in, you know, to not doing it. Then you said 91 is when you had is when you got kind of rededicated your life.
91 is when I had that vision or whatever you want to call it. And, mm-hmm. and just,
when did you meet Bridget?
I had met her at the church, when I had first going there. So her brother and me used to hit it off, and we fished all the time.
Okay.
And so, you know, we started dating. We didn't date long. Eight months.
I would say because 90 or 91, and then got married in 92.
Yeah. And I got other parts of my story that, you know, maybe another day, how you just think you can jump in a relationship and everything.
Oh, yeah. Know?
But the Lord's been good to us, and we've had a good ride. You know, we've had good help. I will tell you this, I on that wreck, and I know I've done most of the talking in this.
no, you're fine. Part,
but this was just a few years ago. I sailed them, which right now I'm in the season. Actually, my knees hadn't been bothering me.
Praise God.
You know, I'm not wearing braces. I went for years. I wore braces every day. But a couple years back, my knees was especially bothering me. Where I had during that wreck, when I came in that night, they drilled that my right leg. They drilled a rod right straight through my leg to put me in traction to try to get me stable. But I've torn my meniscus in both legs, knees, excuse me. And I was kind of, I guess, complaining to the Lord, saying, you know, I know you can heal me, Lord. Why won't you heal my knees?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the Lord reminded me, says, you know, well, what, why does your knees hurt? And he took me back to 86 where I had that wreck. And he reminded me that, I should have died.
Mm-hmm.
And he spared my life, and the pain in my knees, I had forgotten about it, but really he was reminding me of, you know, I'm living a life that really I should never have had.
Mm-hmm.
So it changed my whole perspective, even on pain. You know, right. I said, well, Lord, I thank you that my knees hurt, because that means I'm still kicking, you know.
Yeah, you can right. walk.
Yes, I'm still alive.
So you had a near-death experience and then immediately started a burglary business right after that with some
organized
buddies.
Crime.
Near-death,
yeah. Organized crime right afterwards.
And you were the organizer.
We do stuff like that all the time. We get, God, thank you so much for doing this for me. Now I'm going to go back to what I was doing.
Going
so,
back.
Yeah. But
the bottom line on that, you can't serve God just because you don't want to end up in a wrong destination.
Right.
I mean, you really got to meet him, meet the Lord.
Yeah.
And I think that has to do with all the different religions and stuff like that. You've been going in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. We just want to kind of get a baseline on your, you know, your background and your testimony and how you came to be Keith Ford that we know today.
Your credibility.
Yeah, your credibility. Make sure you got a good background here. But yeah, we're actually going to start transitioning into some theological questions that we have, because Sawyer and I, we tend to talk a lot about you know, religions, Christianities, the scriptures, Catholics, and we talk about them as if we're, you know,
experts, huh?
Right, yeah, and we're nowhere near that. And so, so if you want to hear more about this and hear what Keith has to say about, you know, theology and the questions that we have, we're going to have that coming to you next week. I hate to leave you hanging this week, but we just really want to give you a background on Keith and his testimony. And we talk about him so much in all our episodes, we figure we might as well bring him on here and actually let you hear it from him himself. So thanks, guys, for listening to another episode of Shooting the Breeze. We'll be back next week with Keith Ford again. See ya.